It's the Red Fox Roto Bullpen Report on the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Welcome, everybody. Today's Tuesday, May 19th. So we're covering bullpen news from around the league. And we all know it's been a chaotic year for closers. The discourse has been everywhere on Twitter, Discord channels, podcasts. I mean, just listen to this. Edwin Diaz, Josh Hader, Ryan Helsley, Carlos Estevez, and Emilio Pagan, all injured. Andres Munoz, David Bednar, Pete Fairbanks, Jeff Hoffman, all have ERAs over 4.5. Fairbanks is at 9. Hoffman doesn't even have a job anymore. Among the top 5 on the MLB saves leaderboard, Riley O'Brien, Brian Baker, and Lucas Erceg, just like we drew it up in draft season. And somehow Antonio Senzatella is one of the best relievers in baseball. We're almost a third of the way through the season. I'm not going to say it can't get worse, because it most certainly can. But at least this past week, was relatively calm. So this feels like an episode of the show from last year. I'm only covering 8 teams today. There's no massive upheavals or new injuries, but some potentially impactful situations out there. So let's try to make sense of some of those. And we're going to start in Baltimore, where Ryan Helsley had hoped to return by late May, but he's only just begun playing catch again in his recovery from elbow inflammation. So his new timetable is probably 1 or 2 weeks into June. Rico Garcia hasn't slowed down one bit. His ERA and WHIP are both 0.45. So Garcia should continue to function as the primary closer in Baltimore, and he may even get another 3 to 4 weeks in that role. So he's been a helpful pickup, and certainly in formats where he's still available, that's someone you can go and get. Over now to Cincinnati, where I have to question if anybody wants to save games for the Reds. After Emilio Pagan's injury opened up the door for setup men Tony Santillan or Graham Ashcraft to maybe rise into the ninth inning, they've both done nothing but fall flat on their faces. Santillan has a 16.62 ERA and a 2.77 WHIP in the month of May. Ashcraft has been better, but he still has an 8.64 ERA and 1.56 WHIP this month, and he's allowed 6 runs in his last 2 games. So since Pagan's last save, which was all the way back on April 17th, that surprised me, all of Tony Santillan, Ashcraft, Pierce Johnson, and TJ Antone, there's a name from the grave, they've all earned just a single save each. So Who gets the next save for Cincinnati? All I could do at this point is guess. So just take your pick and hope you're right if you need saves right now. What this all tells me, though, is that once Emilio Pagan is healthy, he's coming right back into that closer role. Now we are going to talk about Colorado. This is a very rare appearance on the show or in the article for the Rockies bullpen. It's been that kind of season for relief pitching, and definitely one of the weirder storylines is that Antonio Senzatella has been one of the best relievers in the game over the first couple months. He has a minuscule 1.27 ERA, 0.81 WHIP over 28 and a third innings, and his strikeout rate is up almost 9 points above his career mark. He's at still not great, but 23.8% this year, where his career mark is closer to 15. Now, of course, nobody earns a 1.27 ERA without luck factors going their way. Senzatella is no exception to that. He's fared exceptionally well in the big three luck areas, where he has a 197 BABIP, a home run per nine of just 0.32, working most of the time in Coors Field. And his strand rate is a very nice 83.3%, but none of those numbers are likely to continue at such advantageous rates. But if we look at Senzatela's ERA estimators, they do show that he's actually earned success this year. I know a lot of people prefer Sierra as maybe the most indicative of true skill level, and that's 3.40 for Senzatela. FIP and XFIP range from like 2.7 to 3.7, and I think his xERA is around 2.8 as well. So how is he getting it done? Well, he's added a couple miles per hour to three different pitches, his four-seam fastball, curveball, changeup. And this year he introduced a new cutter that he's throwing about 30% of the time. So this is a very important pitch for him. So he's got a deep starter's arsenal that's now six pitches. And that's just helped him keep batters off balance. The velo is really helping as well. He has a 76.8% contact rate. And this is the first time in his career his swinging strike rate has been over 10%. It's 11.7, which still isn't an elite number, but it's enough for him to be successful. Now, on Saturday, Senzatela made his first appearance in which he recorded fewer than five outs. I don't know yet if this single inning save chance is a sign that he's going to transition into a more consistent ninth inning role. Time will tell on that one. And, of course, few relievers have ever held any value pitching regularly in Colorado, in Coors Field. Senzatela has plenty of time to fade back into obscurity. But this season has been weird enough, so maybe Antonio Senzatela ends up as a useful option for saves. It shouldn't be too expensive to find out. Now over to Houston, where Josh Hader has already made four rehab appearances. That was before the weekend. He pitched four innings, six strikeouts, one walk allowed, no runs. His velocity hasn't been fully back to 2025 levels, but he's not far off. So it seemed like his return would be near. He's eligible to come off the 60-day IL on, I believe, May 25th. But then we saw reports over the weekend that Hader was due to make at least five more rehab appearances before he'd be activated. It's a little surprising that it's a large number like that, but this probably pushes his return closer to June, maybe even into early June. So this extends Brian King's shelf life as an option for saves, possibly even Eniel De Los Santos. Certainly this is a minor annoyance for those who have held Hader this long already, but the good news is he's absolutely on his way back and he's looking good in his rehab so far. Now to a bullpen I've spent too many words on for as little value as we've gotten out of it. But let's talk about the Angels. So this is something I wrote in my Bullpen Report article, which does release later today. And I started this Angels section by talking about Ryan Zephyrjohn and how he's quietly had a nice start to his 2026 season. Maybe he's the type of post-hype sleeper that could have turned a corner and, you know, given us this great kind of breakout season. He had appeared in the eighth inning or later in his last five games, 7 1/3 innings, only two hits allowed, one run, 12-3, strikeout to walk ratio was looking really good. Kirby Yates has been having trouble just topping 90 miles per hour. Ben Joyce is still rehabbing in the minor leagues, hasn't pitched in over a year. So I don't think he is going to come straight into the closer role. So I thought Zephyrjohn could have a small window of opportunity to, you know, establish some goodwill and save chances, maybe even get himself an extended opportunity as the closer, or at least return that closer of the future label that he used to have. But I started writing that Angel section at 11:30 last night, and by 11:53, Ryan Zephyrjohn was pulled from a ninth inning appearance in a tie game. He had allowed a run on two hits and two walks and left the bases loaded with one out. That's the kind of season that we're having with relief pitching. I can write an opinion, write a take on a pitcher, and it's literally obsolete within 23 minutes of putting it on the page. Thankfully for Zephyrjohn, Chase Silseth came in and bailed him out with an inning-ending double play. But I don't know if this is good news for Ryan Zephyrjohn to continue to, you know, work ninth inning, maybe get save chances. It maybe buys some life for the Kirby Yates and Ben Joyce stashes out there. Now, in Milwaukee, Trevor Megill was one of those deposed closers with a chance to get his job back if either his performance or a lack thereof from his replacement actually warranted a change. And it took a while, but Trevor Megill holders may have finally seen that patience rewarded. Now, Abner Uribe initially pitched very well after his first save in replace of Megill on April 15th. But now, since that time, he has a 4.09 ERA in 11 innings, 11 strikeouts, but 6 walks in that time. So Uribe has hardly been a disaster, but maybe it was enough. It was the excuse Pat Murphy needed to reinstall Trevor Megill as his primary closer, which seems to be an arrangement that Murphy has preferred since the start of last year. So since Megill was pulled from the closer role, he's had a 1.64 ERA, also in 11 innings, and a 15-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio. So just the surface stats say Megill may have earned his way back to the ninth. And maybe we saw that last Friday. Megill was used in the ninth for a save. He converted it. And Abner Uribe faced the top of the Twins lineup in the eighth inning. It could have been just a high-leverage matchup play. Neither pitcher has appeared since. We don't know. But the next Brewers save chance will be a very important one for fantasy purposes. If it's Megill, more of a sign that he could be the closer again. And if it's Uribe, maybe there's a timeshare going on, or maybe it was just a blip. But I'm very eager to see what happens the next time the Brewers have a ninth inning lead. Now head over to New York, the Yankees. And over the offseason, I didn't think the Yankees would make such a bold move that they would displace David Bednar from opening as their closer. But I didn't really think they'd start the season with Fernando Cruz and Camilo Doval as their primary setup men. But they didn't add anyone else of note. And it turns out this deep into the season, maybe it's David Bednar who's been the problem. So counting another run allowed last night where he just escaped with a save, Bednar has allowed one run to score in 11 of his 21 appearances. He's got a 5.14 ERA and a 1.62 whip. He hasn't been terrible converting saves. He's 11 for 13. But if we look back just at last year, Devin Williams was 4 for 5 when he was pulled from the closer role the first time. And before Williams was replaced by Bednar at the trade deadline, Devin Williams had gone 6 for 7 in save chances in July last year. So Aaron Boone, the Yankees, aren't really known for being patient in these situations. It looks like David Bednar better get right fast. Now, Fernando Cruz or Camilo Doval could fill in temporarily if Bednar needs some time off. I'd give the edge to Doval just based on his previous experience as a Giants closer. But Fernando Cruz has also been pitching mostly well this year, and he could factor in too. Now, I'll finish up in Toronto, where whatever glimmer of hope Jeff Hoffman had of getting some save chances again was probably snuffed out when the call-up of Adam Macko was for an injury to Tommy Nance and not Louis Varland, who had gone curiously unused in a recent tie game. But maybe it was just John Schneider giving him an extra day off after pitching a couple games back-to-back. So since Louis Varland's first save on April 21st, Jeff Hoffman has covered 9 2/3 innings, but he's allowed 15 combined hits and walks and 4 earned runs. So he just hasn't been good enough to wrestle the job back from Varland. I don't see a change coming anytime soon. I've been stubborn. I know other people have been stubborn holding Hoffman simply because we know John Schneider likes him. But with Louis Varland pitching as well as he is and Hoffman just not rising, you know, back to those Philadelphia Phillies types, you know, that level of execution, I just don't think we should be stubbornly holding out hope for Hoffman anymore. Might be time to drop him. It is time to drop him, let's be honest. But that's a wrap now on this Tuesday edition of the Bullpen Report on the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. You can catch me again this weekend as I go through the best waiver wire targets for those Sunday ad drop leagues. But until then, let's close it out.